All right, so tonight I'd like to talk about what's called the five hindrances. All right, so we've been focusing on steady attention, learning how to have a non-resistance in that attention, a friendliness of attention, focusing on our breath, body sensations, and learning how to connect with our direct experience instead of our ideas or concepts about that experience. So that's again part of the learning we're talking about in the questions and answers. And that's really a template that we start to use to bring to all kinds of experience. So emotions, thoughts, pleasure, pain, life circumstances, events, as we'll explore more and more as these weeks go on together. Even things like living in a world with COVID and all the struggles and frustrations, the disappointments that happen. It's like those all become things we can bring into our meditation. So we're learning this foundational technique, but it's really about a relationship to life, a relationship to experience, and how can we make that relationship one that is one of learning and growth. We can frame the practice as learning to fully and truly listen, to really listen deeply, to sense what's present, what's here, and to learn to set aside our agenda, our opinions, our ideas, so we can touch what's actually here right now. Now, you would think by doing this, it would lead to more calm, more ease, and more sense of relaxation, which it does overall. But sometimes you may find the opposite arises. You may have found this already. You find yourself being really pulled into a fantasy, into something that's pleasant to think about. Or find yourself really obsessing about something that you're not liking, the sound or sensation, that sense of irritation growing. Or maybe you're trying to sit quietly and your body keeps shifting and fidgeting, and or there's a sense of the mind just keeps thinking and thinking, a sense of restlessness. Or perhaps you find yourself falling asleep, that your mind just kind of gets dull and kind of drifty, or outright find yourself drifting off into sleep while you're meditating. Or sometimes we just get confused. We're not sure of what we should be doing. How should we be focusing? Do these sound familiar? And if they do to you, you should remember that you're in good company, that meditators for at least 2,600 years have also noticed these experiences while meditating. These are very common. They're normal. They're to be expected. The Buddha taught about how to work with them 2,600 years ago. And these are called the five hindrances. I'll give you the official names and we'll go into them more in a little bit. Craving, aversion, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, and doubt. So these five hindrances. Now, I want to just speak for a moment about our basic relationship to them. Because when they're arising, it's really easy to take them personally. Like there's something wrong with me as a meditator because I'm falling asleep. My mind's getting distracted. I'm restless, or am I fidgeting? I'm not doing the meditation right, or it's not the right thing for me. And actually, when a hindrance arises, it's really quite the opposite, that something's wrong. It actually shows you the meditation is working perfectly. So this seems kind of counterintuitive. But the hindrances arising are actually showing the meditation is deepening. If we kind of stay in our superficial, normal way of being in the world, we never start to really connect with what's underneath the surface. That it's being simply still and noticing our breath or sensations, start to let things start to percolate up. And that's one of the reasons the hindrances arise, is that we're actually inviting things to start to unwind. Because we're constantly in a state of tension. We're always kind of tense with our bodies, our minds. We're dealing with our past traumas, our past, injuries. Maybe we're dealing with current traumas, current, things like racism, if we're a person of color, if we're a woman, the sexism. For whatever it might be, our family of origin, our society. There's no shortage of traumas and hurts to be given to us. And we're always trying to navigate that. We're trying to find a way to be happy in our lives. And so that tension has a certain physical, emotional, mental aspect, energetic aspect. And we start to learn how to sit quietly and just be still, softening our resistance, softening our opinions, and really learning to start to fully listen, truly listen, deeply listen. That allows that tension to start to unwind itself. It starts to actually come out of our system. And for those of you who are a little older, you remember landlines for telephones and how we had the, you know, those spiral cords, you know, for the receiver, you know, the dial phone and the coil. And those always get really tangled up. And one trick to unwind them was just to turn it upside down and let the receiver dangle. And it would start to spin and twist all over the place as it started to work through its tension patterns. Okay, so guess what? That's similar to us. We're turning ourselves upside down and just being still. And we start to work through those tension patterns. They start to come out in body sensations, you know, maybe different memories, things you haven't thought about for years comes up. You know, it could be that maybe much more closer to the surface, the sadness, the grief, the anger might become right there. When my wife and I, before we became married, the person marrying us, actually my meditation teacher, gave us a simple exercise of doing a reflective listening exercise. So we would sit and listen to each other. And the idea was you listen and you would just paraphrase and reflect what you had heard. And the other person to confirm, okay, you got it or you didn't get it. And once we first started doing that, we would take turns. You know, one person would talk for a period and then we would switch. It would take a couple hours because we had a lot of things we hadn't said to each other, you know, a lot of areas of hurt or slight. And it was felt so good to start to actually share that. You know, there's the trust, there's a sense of, will I still be heard and loved? And when I was heard and loved, I started to allow more and more stuff to come up. And then eventually there's a place of balance that happens. And so this happens somewhat in meditation too, that we start to unwind and things start to arise up. And it's a process. You know, it's a process of initial unwinding and then maybe there'd be a period of calm and steadiness and then there'd be another deeper unwinding and you just start to trust that more and more. So we're learning to listen deeply to ourselves. And it's one of the most profound gifts you can give yourself is this ability to listen without self-judgment, without agenda. Just deeply listen to what is here right now. And then from that place, that becomes the foundation of how we act. If we listen with reactivity and judgment, our actions will have that inherent in that. As we learn to do that for ourselves, we naturally find that gives a gift we give to other people. And as you go through the class, you may find those who are close to you may appreciate that your listening improves. They start to naturally attend to them as you do your own experience, listening through your judgment, your preconceptions to actually hear this other person. So this is kind of the backdrop of that attitude of working with the hindrances and not seeing them as an obstacle, as a barrier, but actually a process of things deepening. So let's explore how to work with these hindrances. And there's generally three ways or three aspects. The first is to recognize that a hindrance is present. If we're not recognizing it, we're more likely to be caught in it, caught in the reactivity around it. And instead of actually observing it, it's doing us. Then learning how to meet them with a skillful means, in a way that allows us to navigate through them and not get caught and lost in them, but actually learn from them. And then finally, learning how to meet them with non-resistance. Actually, that itself is the ultimate way of working with them. So let's look at each of these in turn and so we can recognize them in some skillful means, and then I'll just talk at the end about non-resistance for all of them at once. So the first one, craving or desire. This is the wanting of what's pleasant. Okay, this is almost feels like this movement toward something, movement toward what we desire, that we find exciting or interesting or alluring. It can have a physical aspect, it can have a mental. Sometimes as you can catch yourself, your hands are reaching for something pleasant before you even realize that you're reaching. If you pause, you can feel that sense of craving. And this can play out mentally, physically, with memory, looking to the future. It has this feeling of moving toward, leaning toward. Sometimes we wake up in the middle of a pleasant thought stream from meditation and realize, oh, I was really drifting down that last vacation. Now, each of these hindrances has a way of kind of changing the way that we were able to observe and see life clearly. You can think of meditation as learning to see life in a very clear, direct way. And I came up with this analogy of a camera crew. So if you had a camera crew that had this task of documenting this other culture, and the important not to change the culture, not to alter it, but to capture it just how it is. Now, this camera crew is caught in craving. They're going to tend to always focus on what they find pleasant, pleasing. So you're going to have a very biased documentary if that was what you're trying to create. You're going to just see the beauty in life instead of seeing the sorrow. Right? You're going to just see the pleasure and not the pain. And that's when we are caught in craving, our attention tends to focus on that. And of course, life, as anyone figure out how to always have pleasant experiences and never unpleasant, you know, it's impossible. So it really behooves us to be able to develop this capacity to meet life just how it is, in its ups and downs. So how do you work with craving? And you start to feel that sense of craving in itself. What does that actually feel like in the body? If you tune into this, like if you have, let's say, a cookie that you want to eat, put it in front of you and feel that impulse to move. And, you know, just pause for a little bit before you take that cookie into your mouth. You can feel that how the craving itself perhaps isn't so pleasant. There's that lack, that hunger. It's a very helpful thing for us to practice and become attuned toward. You can also start to look at the negative aspects of whatever you're craving, to kind of sober us up from that kind of fantasy of it just being the thing that will solve all our problems. So craving, that sense of moving toward. The next hindrance is that of aversion, of dislike, not wanting, moving away from what's unpleasant. Okay, so you might ask, well, why not just move away? You know, if something's unpleasant, you know, why not just escape from that? And really, we're learning how to have more choice and capacity. So a choice to, okay, I'm going to meet with this experience. And of course, some pain we can't escape from. You know, it's visiting us, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, the life circumstances, whatever it might be. Learning to develop this capacity to hold it is very helpful. And we also start to learn to be less reactive and less kind of knee-jerk with how we act in the world. And so something as simple as sitting and you're meditating and you feel this itch, you know, normally we would just scratch the itch without thinking about it. Is it really pleasant, or not a pleasant thing, but it's a helpful thing to practice, is not to scratch the itch, but to feel the impulse and the sensation. By doing this, you start to say, okay, just like focusing our attention like we did in the meditation, what does that itch really feel like? What's the impulse to want to scratch it feel like? And practice like this for a while. And if the itch is still there, then let yourself scratch or let yourself move the body. But initially, start to practice having that okay, I'm going to meet this experience and see if I can open to it to some degree. This is practicing opening to life's pain that we can't avoid, that we can't simply scratch and make go away. And it's very, very helpful, especially when life hands us those very difficult cards. So aversion, this is this movement away from what's unpleasant, mentally, physically, emotionally, that non-resistance is a key way of working with it. Now going back to that camera crew trying to create a documentary, now this time the camera crew is focused on what's unpleasant. It's always seeing what's unpleasant and moving away from it, seeing it and moving away. So again, the documentary is very distorted. You know, and so that's when we always are moving away from what's unpleasant. So start to notice when aversion happens. Start to feel it as a direct, raw experience. You know, the essence of what does it feel like to not want something, to not like this? You know, if there's a particular object, you know, we're always trying to focus on that object. See if you can step back and notice the actual experience of how you're relating to that object. Turning toward that experience with curiosity, with interest, seeing what's there. And as I spoke about in the questions and answers, learning to balance your attention with something else that's not so charged in the moment, like the sound of a bird or the beauty of nature, or maybe the warmth of your hands, if that's pleasant to you. That way your attention learns that balance. So craving, aversion. Next one is restlessness and worry. Okay, so restlessness is the physical aspect. Worry is the mental aspect, the anxiety. So this is an excess of energy. We're not able to sit still either physically or mentally. And we're just kind of, sometimes we're just literally, you know, fidgeting our bodies all over the place. Or our minds are just kind of in that obsessive loop. We cannot stop thinking. The physical part can have a vibration, sometimes just a tension, a sense of trembling. And sometimes it can be quite intense. It's like an energy is building up. And of course, the mental part of it can be the worry, the anxiety, this proliferation of thought. The classic example around this is if we, let's say we're taking a walk out right now in this dusk time, and we see this coil of a garden hose or a rope in the distance, and we get closer and we think, well, maybe that's not a coil rope. Maybe it's a snake. Somehow a snake escaped from the zoo or something. And then we start to have thoughts about that. We start to have worry about it. We have to have more thoughts about it. If that's a snake and it bites me, you know, maybe it's going to be poisonous and I won't get help in time. I'll lose my leg. If I lose my leg, I won't be able to work. If I can't work, I'll lose my house or be my family. My wife will leave me. My spouse will leave me. And pretty soon, from one vision, we've created this whole world. So this is, I'm making this hopefully a, you know, an example you can see. If you look, you can see that you're doing this all the time. We have one thought and we create this whole world around it. Okay. Buddhism, we have a word called papancha, proliferation of thought. This is a manifestation of this restlessness and worry. So restlessness and worry, sometimes it's just, excuse me while I change my page there. Sorry to cut across the screen. You know, sometimes that restlessness and worry has a particular object that we're focusing on, like a life circumstance or an interaction. And sometimes it just seems to bubble up in our system. It just comes out of the blue. I always think of those lava lamps from the, I think it was the 70s or 80s or whenever they had those, and it would start to bubble up and then dissipate and then it would kind of recycle. And that's that almost purification that happens as we meditate. We create this environment for things start to bubble out. And sometimes it's a big bubble of restlessness and worry. And the more we practice, we can start to be nonchalant about that. It's like, okay, that's just going through my system. And not be knocked off our seat and worry about it. So the camera crew in this case, it's like not very steady. It's like it's shaking as it's looking. And so everything has this kind of blurry quality. So working with restlessness and worry, again, feeling as an experience, you know, feeling with non-resistance. You know, what does it really feel like in the body is the primary way. Trying to relax so it moves through you, not holding it contained, but letting everything be held in a spacious environment. See if you can relax the body, open the body. Open the eyes can be very helpful when restlessness and worry happens, just to kind of reorient yourself to what's here right now, that the object of your worry is in your mind if it's not right in front of you. And emphasizing the exhale, this can physiologically start to calm ourselves, allow ourselves to relax. Okay, so restlessness and worry. Okay, the fourth one is sloth and torpor. Sloth and torpor. We don't use torpor very much in this day and age, or even sloth. Also think of it as sleepiness, dullness. This is the lack of energy, you know, the sense of kind of drifting. It can be all the way of just falling outright asleep, as I'm sure some of you have noticed in your meditation, to just kind of being in a kind of a pleasant daydream. Like, I'm not quite thinking, I'm not quite on the breath, just kind of unfocused and diffuse. That's also a quality of sloth and torpor, going in and out of daydream. And this can be kind of seductive because it feels good, but we're not really present. We're not as awake as we could be. So sloth and torpor sometimes can just be coming out of our system, you know, for no particular reason. Sometimes it's because we are not rested. We're not getting enough sleep. You know, maybe we're going through a very stressful time and we're having grief, we're having worry, and we're exhausted. And so that's also sometimes it's just the conditions of your life. And sometimes it's just what's going through your system with no rhyme or reason. So going back to our camera crew example, now the aperture is kind of shut down, so it's really dark. There's not enough light coming in to actually see what's in front of you. Now, working with sloth and torpor, sleepiness, first of all, recognize it, okay? And this is really helpful. I'll say this and we'll probably forget it, but not to judge yourself because you're feeling sleepy. You know, it's so easy to say, okay, if I was a better meditator, I wouldn't be sleepy. You know, it happens to all of us. And actually, the more we fight against the fact we're sleepy, the more painful it gets. Because what we've done is we've taken sloth and torpor and we added aversion to it. We've just given ourselves a multiple hindrance attack. So it's like, okay, I'm falling asleep. You know, so sitting upright, you know, refreshing the posture, opening the eyes can be very helpful. Just like with restlessness or anytime we're feeling kind of uneasy, opening the eyes can calm us, and it also can bring more energy. You know, maybe focusing just in a few feet in front of you. One trick I like to do is I take my fingers and I interlace them so they're not quite touching. And then if I start to fall asleep, there's that feedback as they hit each other. So I kind of keep that space between them. Standing up is a wonderful way to work with sleepiness. So you're always welcome to stand up. You know, when you're meditating either in Zoom like this, or if you're in the meditation hall, in a class, or in a retreat, to stand up and kind of bring more wakefulness to your posture. It can also be helpful with restlessness too, if you're feeling that sense of things are just getting anxiety, or you're getting that sense of can't sit still. Standing up can really help you shift from that. And then reflecting if you need more sleep. You know, are you getting enough sleep? Are you trying to burn the candle at both ends? So sloth and torpor. And the final hindrance is that of doubt. So doubt can be a sense of confusion, you know, uncertainty, you're not sure. It can be like, okay, am I doing this right or wrong? Or am I not right for this practice? It can have a very strong mental component. And it can really have a power of undercutting our practice because we lose our way, lose our clarity. In this case, the camera crew doesn't know what they're supposed to focus on. Am I doing a documentary on nature or on people, or, you know, what am I supposed to focus on? It just gets very confused. So skillful means. Doubt is one of the ones that's harder to work on by yourself. You often need some kind of external input. It could be like taking a class like this, you know, asking a question. You know, in a class, if you have the opportunity to talk to a teacher, is very helpful. And a lot of the questions that come up are around how to navigate doubt. You know, working with, you know, getting some inspiration, like reading a good book that inspires you around your practice, listening to a talk, you know, maybe doing a guided meditation. All those things can bring a sense of clarity to your practice. So these five hindrances of craving, of aversion, of restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, and finally doubt. Again, these come to all of us. They can be coming to us as human beings for the last 2,600 years. So an important thing is not to take them personally, not to see them as some statement of you failing, but more of like a weather system that's moving through your body, through your mind. And learning to sit in the midst of whatever weather system. Like here in Seattle, if I only went out when it was sunny, I wouldn't go out very much. So learning to go out when it's raining, when it's snowy, when it's blistery, when it's bright sunlight. Same thing with our own minds and bodies. It's such a gift to give yourself to be able to meet yourself in all kinds of ranges of experience. And that teaches you how to meet yourself when life throws its ups and downs at you. Allows us to start to move through life with more grace, with more frame, with more ease, I should say. Learning to reframe the hindrances as teachers is actually a gift to let us show how we are in the world. Because as we become more familiar with these hindrances, we see they don't just show up in meditation. They actually show up in our lives, in our interactions, in our relationships. We just get to see them in highlighted form in our meditation. So turn toward them with curiosity, with interest, because this is a journey. It's a process. And I'm just going to conclude with a famous poem by Rumi that speaks to this attitude of relationship to the hindrances. It's called a guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight, the dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. All right, if we could just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle.